What have we covered in electrochemistry so far? You have to know oxidation state versus formal charge, which is the discussion that we had in lab lecture on exactly that topic. More importantly, it's going to be focusing on oxidation states because you have to be able to determine oxidation states in order to do redox reactions. You should know something about redox reactions, that there's an oxidizer and a reducer always involved. That implicitly means that you remember back from your previous chemistry what reduction is and what oxidation is. I don't know that I'll point blank ask what those two things are because it is past review material, but you never know, I might ask it, because if you don't know what reduction is and oxidation is, you can't do any of the rest of it. So you need to know that there is always an oxidizer, reducer. The oxidizer, because it ends up ripping electrons off of something else, gains electrons its own self, which means it's getting reduced. And then the reducer, because it's providing electrons to something else, means that it's losing the electrons itself, which means it's getting oxidized. So you should know that relationship between oxidizer, reducer, oxidized, and reduced. And we did talk about an example like that on Wednesday before the fire drill. On Wednesday, we talked about balancing redox equations. And we did do the half reaction method. That's all prep leading up to the actual topic of electrochemistry, which we're starting today in lecture. We already had an overview lecture in lab. That's where I discussed the construction of an electrochemical cell. And that is my goal for today, to get us back to the point where in lecture we have covered a simple electrochemical cell. So unless I get further through lecture than I expect, it is going to be all of today's lecture that is on the quiz because it's going to be a repetition for the most part of what we talked about in lab since we're again talking about the electrochemical cell. So these three topics leading up to electrochemistry, plus whatever about electrochemistry we're able to discuss today. Is that fairly clear than what's going to be on the quiz? So before we can do the electrochemical cell, I did want to briefly talk about voltage a little bit, because I know some of you haven't had physics, and there's also a relationship between voltage and energy, and between that and delta G. So let's see if we can talk about that just very briefly. And to cheat, let me refer to the book here. First, let's start with this thing called an ampere. Those of you who have had physics, what is this? It is the fundamental unit of current. Current, the analogy we can use, is like a river that is flowing from one point to another. The thing that gets really confusing for chemistry versus physics students is we define things backwards. Because long ago, positive charge was the way that current was conceptualized. Except that in most systems, it's not real true positive charges that are moving around. It's electrons, which are negatively charged. So conceptually, if positive charge is flowing one direction, then electrons are flowing the opposite direction. So if you're in physics and you're talking about direction of current flow, you're talking about something that's backwards from what we normally talk about in chemistry, where we tend to talk about electron flow. So I don't know if we're going to encounter that situation today or not, but I just want to put that out there in case any of you get confused reading about current. What is then a volt? And let me find the section that speaks to this so you can go review it later. This is... oh, I just had it earlier. Part of it is in 21.4, and part of it is in 21.3. So a volt... is electric potential. It's not potential energy. It is the potential to give you energy. I know I just defined potential with the word potential, but it's kind of like gravity. Gravity doesn't have a certain amount of energy associated with it. It is a force. And so volts are related to force. Once you move a certain amount of electrons around, well, depending what your voltage is, then that's what determines energy. So, in fact, a volt can be defined in terms of other units. 1 volt is equal to 1 joule, which is our standard unit of energy, divided by C, which is a coulomb. Which is a unit of charge. If we rewrite that expression, that means 1 joule, which is a certain amount of energy, is equal to 1 volt times this coulomb, a certain amount of charge. More generally, then, energy can be calculated by taking voltage and multiplying by charge. If this was physics class, maybe I would spend more time doing a unit analysis, because there are different ways of taking the standard SI units and coming up with things like joules and volts. At some point, it gets back to an ampere, and I'll get back to amperes later on when we do problems involving what's known as deposition, the fact that you can take a current, pass it through a solution, and cause metals to, if you want to put it that way, precipitate out. Since current is related to how much electron flow there is, and since how much metal you get out is also related to electron flow, that's why we'll come back to amps in just a moment. But focusing on the energy part of this, this is the part that's in 21.4. Where we care about energy is free energy, delta G. That really is the true potential energy. And as I got from this expression up here, then that means it's related to voltage, which usually for voltage, we use the symbol E, electrochemical potential. And in fact, it's usually given the symbol E cell. Voltage, by definition, when it's positive, that is a favorable voltage, meaning that we're going to get a release of energy. And so there is a negative sign put in front of the equation here to adjust for the fact that we refer to positive voltage as favorable. And then there is in this equation charge. Now, coulombs, that's one unit of energy or one unit of charge, but there's another unit of charge, the farad, which if you're not familiar with these units of all. Farad comes from Faraday, who is a researcher in the field. Coulomb, same thing. It's a person's name. Volt from volta. So farad is 1 mole of electrons. Not to belabor the point too much, but a coulomb is more related directly to SI units. Oh, no, that's not true. Farad is more related to SI units because a mole is a standard unit of measure. There is a conversion factor to go between farads and coulombs, and that is what is used as the variable F, or the constant F, in the equation that's in your text. Because what they do is they rewrite charge this way. They say, okay, in some kind of redox reaction, there's a certain number of electrons being transferred. And so we could look at the number of moles that come from a particular reaction. If you can think back to the balancing of equations that we did on Wednesday, each of the half reactions, it released a certain number of electrons or gained a certain number of electrons. So it's that number of electrons, N, that goes here. There is then this constant F that is a conversion factor. And it takes us from farads to coulombs because if you can look at this other equation up here, that joules are related to volts and coulombs. Electrochemical potential is in volts. Moles are related to farads, and so then there's this constant that we multiply to convert it into coulombs, so now that you can multiply it by volts so that you can get joules, which is exactly the same unit the delta G is in. What this shows us is that the free energy of a system is directly proportional to the voltage. Higher the voltage, higher the chemical potential energy. This also means that if we have some system that ends up with a negative voltage, that means it's going to be a non-spontaneous reaction. And so there are two types of electrochemical cells in general. One which spontaneously generates energy, so in other words, the cell overall would have a positive voltage, and one that effectively has a negative voltage, meaning that we have to apply energy to it. And those are usually what are known as electrolytic cells. Electro, meaning related to electrons. Lytic, related to lysis, which means to cut. So in other words, using electricity to somehow break a compound apart. I didn't write all that part down because the only one that we're going to focus on today is the voltaic cell, the spontaneous cell, which is exactly the same type of cell that we had in lab. We may not even use these definitions. In fact, maybe I'll say, just to make everyone relax that wasn't in physics before, that this portion is not on the quiz. But if I'm going to talk about voltage, you have to have at least some context where that relates to. And what we're going to relate to eventually is that voltage is related to delta G. The reason that matters is because we know there's an expression where we can have an equilibrium constant related to delta G. And so if you put those two thoughts together, that means equilibrium and voltage are related. And so what we're going to talk about today are what are called standard cells. The voltages in cells, if they depend on concentration, there has to be some standard that you use to talk about them. And that is the same as the standard state that you hopefully learned back in Chem 1B. Did you all learn about the standard state? That when you write a little zero above your delta H, what that means? Same thing here. Electrochemical potential, there's often a zero we put here, which means a standard cell. That's what I want to talk about now. And I'm going to develop the same kind of example as I did in lab. I think in lab maybe I used copper and silver as my starting materials, so I'm going to do the same thing here, only because there's a real life experiment you can do for kids that sometimes gets them interested, where if you take a beaker of silver nitrate and you throw a penny into it, and an old penny, because at some point we switched to using mostly not copper, because copper's a pricey metal. But if you have a penny that really is majority of copper, which any penny before 1982, I think, was, you put it into the silver nitrate, and what you'll see are little, like, tendrils of silver appearing to grow from the penny. And all that's going on is you have a redox reaction. That redox reaction will turn your solution blue over time. Why? Because if you have silver nitrate in solution and you put copper in it, the copper ends up oxidizing, going into solution because it becomes an ion. Well, copper ions often in solution are blue or green. So copper nitrate in solution tends to have a blue color. What caused that copper to oxidize and become an ion? The fact that silver was taking electrons from it. And silver therefore becomes a metal, which is what deposits on the penny, which makes it look like you're turning a copper penny into silver. So if you got a kid that doesn't know much about chemistry and won't say, well, what's in that solution? Then it means you can make it look like magic. Let me write this example down because we're then going to separate these two things. Because I said, what happens if you put a penny into the silver nitrate? Well, the two react, but as I had talked about in lab, what if we can somehow separate those reactions so we take advantage of that electron flow and harness it somehow? That's where our electrochemical cell comes from. But it's useful maybe having this example of the penny and the silver nitrate so that you can understand that there is a redox process that's going on. So here's our penny, which is copper. If you have a solution of silver nitrate, then what will happen over time is the copper in the penny will be replaced with silver. And the solution turns blue, from the copper nitrate formed. What happened here was a redox reaction. Silver in its positive form, reacting with copper metal to form silver metal, and then copper ions. This is an unbalanced equation, but I'm just trying to show you what it is that's going on here. So silver gains electrons and so it is reduced. Copper loses two electrons. And so it is oxidized. Let me state the obvious. What is not happening here is that silver is not reacting with copper ions to make copper metal. In other words, the reaction wants to go forward the way that I've written it. In electrochemical terms, the combination of the silver and the copper generates a positive voltage, which is why the reaction wants to go forward. If nothing more than a hand-waving explanation, if voltage is related to delta G in the way that I've described it, putting a positive number here for voltage makes a negative delta G, makes a spontaneous reaction. What we're going to see as we talk about these electrochemical cells is there's a table that we can look at where we can see how likely is silver going to be reduced. How likely is copper going to be oxidized? This is a table called the standard reduction potentials, which we'll get to in a moment once I talk physically about how we set up the cell. So if you're wondering at all, how could we predict that copper and silver were going to react in this way? We look up which one is the better reducing agent, which one's the better oxidizing agent. And it turns out silver is better than copper at being an oxidizing agent. That's why silver is able to steal the electron from copper and gets reduced. That last little bit I'll write down because that's related to how this cell operates. Silver, 1, is a better oxidizing agent than copper 2, which is why the silver reacts with copper metal. Now let's construct that cell where we're able to separate the two halves of the reaction. In order to do that, let's rewrite the expression to balance it and using whatever other ions might be present in the solution. So in reality, what we would have is silver nitrate reacting with copper metal, and to anticipate it's going to be two silver nitrates. The zero is not necessary if you're showing solid here, but it's just habit of mine. The zero means zero oxidation state, which is what you have if you have any element in its unreactive elemental form, like if we have solid copper. Those two react to make silver metal, two silvers, plus copper, two nitrate. Now that we can see, yes.
Is there only one nitrate with the silver and the product in the reactants?
There is only one. I've started to write parentheses, but not needed. That's why I had to stick the two in front of the whole thing so I get enough nitrates total. So we have silver nitrate and silver. We have copper and copper nitrate. So if we want to prevent the reaction between silver and copper, we're going to put the silver and silver nitrate in one solution, and we're going to put the copper and copper nitrate in another solution. I'm going to choose to put the copper on the left in my diagram. So we have copper nitrate, plus we're going to have an electrode. Which is physically where you can connect up to the cell. Electrodes, you hopefully already remember, we have two flavors, anodes and cathodes, and we'll get to which one is which in just a second. But the general term for it is electrode. Because this is the copper solution, it's going to be the copper electrode that we put in it. In theory, then nothing's going to go on in this reaction, because all we have is the reactant and the product of just one half of the reaction. All that would happen here in theory is that we would have oxidation. But until we hook it up to some of the rest of the cell, nothing happens because it's not going to spontaneously oxidize. So in the other cell, we have another electrode. Now in the lab example, I might have started out with a piece of metal as the electrode. To add one small level of complication, let's say that this is platinum, which is unreactive under these conditions. Platinum and palladium are very frequently used as metals that don't tend to react as well. So we can get away with using platinum as an electrode because it's not going to interfere with whatever other reactions are going on. In theory, though, we're going to be accumulating silver. So over time, we would see silver deposit itself onto the platinum metal. The solution here would still be silver nitrate because, oh gosh, I did the parentheses again. It would be silver nitrate because that's our source of silver. We connect the wire between the two, and we could imagine that we're measuring the voltage that results. There's one thing missing from this, though, which is what? Salt bridge. Good. So some of you remember that discussion from lab. Why is a salt bridge necessary? To create a circuit. That's right. That's one way to answer it. Why is a circuit necessary? What would prevent this battery from operating if we didn't have the circuit closed? That's right. Electrons would collect in one beaker versus the other, which is not physically possible. You can't keep stuffing negative charges into something that's already negative. It would take energy to do that. And in theory, you're trying to harness the energy from this reaction, not require even more energy to get the reaction to go. And so what we do is we put the salt bridge here, which is filled with some kind of non-reactive salt, meaning one that won't be oxidized or reduced by these reaction conditions. So it contains a non-reactive salt, one that will not be oxidized or reduced. It is a non-reactive salt that acts as a source of cations and anions to balance the charge. Balance the charges generated by the cell. What is going to be generated here? Well, we have the redox reaction that I wrote on the page previous. And so let's turn that into half reactions now. The silver side is where reduction is occurring. So we have silver ion reacting with an electron to make silver solid. That means in that side, the nitrate is left over. And that means that negative charge would accumulate. Then on the other side, we have copper, which is getting oxidized. So it is becoming copper plus 2, and it's releasing 2 electrons. What's left over? Nothing's left over. We're generating positive charge. And so because of that, we could say positive charge accumulates. And so in terms of ion flow through the salt bridge, if we have positive charge that's being generated on this left-hand side, that means anions will want to flow to the left. Then for the other side, because we have negative charge building up there, we have cations that would flow to the right. There are the names for the two electrodes. One to represent where oxidation is occurring, and one to refer to where reduction is occurring. And those are the anode and the cathode, respectively. I've probably had already mentioned in lab that there's a convenient mnemonic that we have in English, at least, where oxidation starts with an O, a vowel. It matches the anode that starts with an A, also a vowel. Reduction starts with an R, which is a consonant, matches the fact that the cathode starts with a C, which is also a consonant. So oxidation at the anode, reduction at the cathode. Notice also that anions go to the anode and cations go to the cathode. One last thing to annotate this diagram with, and we've got the whole first essential cell. At the anode, because that's where oxidation is occurring, that's where negative charge is coming from. So this is the negative terminal in this electrochemical cell. On the right-hand side, since this is where reduction is occurring, that's where negative charges are being consumed. Or you could also look and say that is where, that's the best way to think of it. That means what we call that the positive terminal. That is our electrochemical cell. What is there left to talk about then? Well, examples of electrochemical reactions, but also this discussion of standard cell potential. How do we measure voltages? How do we determine what's going to get oxidized and reduced? And then once we get through all that, how does concentration have an effect? Does anyone have any questions on this diagram of an electrochemical cell? Yes. Yes, in these kinds of spontaneous cells, yes. So even on a battery, the negative terminal then would be where the electrons come from, the positive side where they go to. Again, for those of you who've had physics, flow is usually shown going from the positive end to the negative. But this is physically what's happening. Any other questions on the cell? So, voltage is something that is relative, just like potential energy is something that is relative, meaning that I could call this table, for example, gravitationally potential energy of zero. If I take this book and lift it, now I'm putting energy into it because I'm fighting gravity. So it has a positive, or it has a potential energy to it, which it's going to lose that energy if it drops down to the table and come back to zero. But what if I define my floor as my zero instead? Well, then the energy change from here is going to be different depending on whether I define the table to be zero or whether I've defined the floor to be zero. Voltage is the same type of thing. It may not be potential energy, but it's still a potential. So conceptually, it means that something's elevated and something's going to fall. So how far that drop is depends on where we call zero. And so there is a standard zero cell that we use. And that involves the reduction of hydrogen. Why? Because it involves just H plus in solution. So in other words, if you have an aqueous solution, all you have is acid there, you can have a redox reaction occur. That might be a good way to define a relative zero point, because that means even with nothing else dissolved in solution, except maybe something generating H plus, that means a redox reaction can occur in water. So maybe that's not such a bad point to call zero. It happens to work out also that if we make the cell that I'm about to describe the zero, that there's about the same amount of voltage possible either direction for redox reactions or reduction reactions. If we look at the periodic table, for example, fluorine, that's one of the most electronegative elements on the periodic table, and that ends up being one of the best oxidizing agents. And so it generates one of the largest voltages for oxidizers. If we look at the periodic table again, though, and look at something like lithium, turns out lithium ends up being one of the best reducing agents, which might make sense because it's got relatively low ionization energy. And so it ends up having one of the largest voltages for reducers. Those two ends, fluorine and lithium, are kind of about the same distance from this standard cell. So on top of the fact that it's related to water, it's also kind of in the middle of all the values we're going to have anyways, which makes it, again, a good reason to find it as zero. Yes?
Is that why, like, lithium-ion batteries?
Because lithium's a great reducing agent, yes. And I don't know much about the production of lithium, but presuming that it doesn't blow up as easily as some other metals, maybe, that's also why it's a good metal. That's a different thing, but yes, lithium is used in, I think, treating bipolar disorders. But I'm not a doctor, and although interesting, a little off topic. So, yeah. But no. I like talking about that kind of thing, but I want to make sure that we get through the standard cell. In order to get to the standard cell, I now have to go backwards a little bit and talk about the standard state. As I was referring to earlier, this little zero here means standard state. And you'll see that on delta G, delta S, delta H, and on E. Anything related to thermodynamics. Why does this standard state matter? Well, if you increase temperature, for example, then maybe you change the rate that a particular reaction is occurring at. Maybe you can change, therefore, the concentrations that exist in solution. Maybe that would have an effect on equilibrium, not necessarily change the equilibrium constant, although equilibrium constants do change with temperature. So in other words, if we're talking about anything related to thermodynamics, we got to make sure that we're comparing things at a common set of conditions, and normal human conditions are what are usually defined as the standard state. So can anybody tell me what the standard temperature is? Now, this is different from STP. There's standard temperature and pressure, which is the set of conditions usually used for gases. But then there's the thermodynamic standard state that is not the same thing. So 298 Kelvin. What about pressure? 1. Technically, these days, it is 1 bar. 1 bar is 100,000 pascals. An atmosphere is a 101325, so it's almost the same thing as an atmosphere, but ever so slightly less. The reason that a bar is used because it can be related to metric units. It's related to pascals, which are related to meters and newtons, so it's all SI units. There's some other restrictions, though, on what the standard state is. Ion concentration. What is the standard state for ion concentration? 1 molar. Because 1 is an easy number to calculate with. So 298, because that's room temperature. 1 bar, because that's generally what atmospheric pressure is. And then 1 molar for concentrations, just to make calculations with K easier. What then is the standard cell? A good example of it is shown on page 932. And let me try to recreate this a little bit. We'll still have 2 halves, because the standard cell is really just what you use for 1/2 of this reaction. It is a container in which you have hydrogen gas. You have a 1 molar solution of H plus. We'll just assume for the moment that whatever anion is used to go along with the H plus is unreactive. And the example that's shown in your book is then to have 1 molar zinc solution along with zinc metal as our other electrode. So if you notice the redox reaction I wrote up above here, which I'll copy it down here so you know what it's referring to. This is the reaction potentially that could go on, that hydrogen could pull electrons in from somewhere and form hydrogen gas. That's if whatever we react with ends up being a better reducing agent than hydrogen. In other words, if there's something that likes to give electrons up, then we're going to form hydrogen gas. But maybe until we do this experiment, we don't know which way the reaction's going to go. So maybe instead hydrogen gas is going to be consumed. It's going to provide electrons to this other side, and you're going to end up with H plus in solution. Well, both are possible depending on what metal we choose. So in other words, what we're about to look at is what's a better reducing agent, zinc or hydrogen? What's a better oxidizing agent, zinc plus or H plus? Well, if we hook this together, put the voltmeter on it, have a salt bridge. It turns out that the electrons do flow exactly the way that I had in the first diagram. It turns out, therefore, that H plus does get reduced in solution. So let's look at that redox reaction, write it out. We have zinc metal that's reacting with two H pluses to therefore become zinc ions and reduce and form hydrogen gas. What we find out is that the standard cell, where everything is one molar concentration, we don't have to worry about the metal because metals don't have a calculatable concentration. Assuming that we have one, okay, the book says one atmosphere, but the more modern definition of standard state is one bar. So with that small adjustment, when all these conditions are true, we get a voltage of 0.76 volts. Great. What does that mean? Well, if we had some other metal, which let me just show you the table that's here and actually explain the table a little bit. Because you'll notice that by convention, most of the time the tables are written in the terms of reduction. That's why the table is usually called standard reduction potentials. You can see that we've got hydrogen right in the middle here. Again, the two extremes, fluorine and lithium. Fluorine, as I said, is a great oxidizing agent, which is why it is getting reduced. And you can see that it's got a very positive voltage, which means favorable, for fluorine to be reduced. Let me scoot this out of the way just for a moment. Look again at what I showed you here, that according to this diagram, the reaction really is going to occur in such a way that zinc provides electrons to the hydrogen. That means zinc doesn't like getting reduced compared to hydrogen. It prefers to get oxidized. How could we use the table to tell that? Well, look at where zinc shows up on the table. Here, instead of the positive 0.76 that I had in the notes, it's got a negative. But that's because here, zinc is being forced to be reduced. Zinc does not like being reduced compared to hydrogen. And that's exactly how we then can use the table. Because zinc would prefer to be oxidized, that's exactly what happens. That's when we have hydrogen present. What about silver and copper? Because I had brought that up as an example earlier. Well, let's compare the two. For silver to be reduced, that's a positive voltage of 0.8. For copper to be reduced, that's a positive voltage of only 0.34. That matches what I had said earlier, that silver really would rather be reduced than copper would. And so that forces copper to have the reverse reaction, which that's a little bit of a negative voltage for copper, but the overall cell still ends up with a positive voltage. That's more of a discussion we're going to have after the quiz, bringing it back to this example of a standard cell. All those voltages that are in the table are measured compared to this standard hydrogen cell. And so let me write that part down. So I guess I should be more careful and say that the hydrogen ion slash hydrogen gas system is used as a standard half cell when measuring the voltage of other redox reactions. The voltages generated are referred to then as the standard cell potentials. And so the way I express it here is the voltage, when the voltage is measured in this way, it is referred to the standard oxidation or standard reduction potential. Depending on whether hydrogen ends up getting reduced or oxidized by the other half of the cell. In the future, we'll tend to use a table of reduction potentials. That's the way it's normally expressed. And we'll talk about how do we flip that around when we need oxidation. And then we'll talk about how do we calculate when a cell is going to be spontaneous. To wrap this up one more time to kind of focus your study for the quiz, it is these three items that I listed earlier that are going to be part of the quiz. Can you determine formal charge and oxidation state, mostly focusing on oxidation state, but still you need to know the difference between these two things. You will balance a redox reaction, so if you were absent Wednesday, I will be posting the notes this afternoon. We did do two complete examples, one of balancing in acidic conditions, one in balancing a set of basic conditions. You need to know in general what are redox reactions. And then from today's lecture, you really need to know these two things. What does a normal electrochemical, spontaneous electrochemical cell look like? And what does the standard half cell look like? Yes?
In basic conditions, we have to add one OH to each.
So for the quick version, the difference between balancing in acidic and in basic conditions is yes. For both of those, you'd start with acidic conditions. But then for basic conditions, for every H plus you end up with, you add an OH to both sides.
So we should know how to draw.
Yes, you better know how to draw a standard cell. What does one look like? I will point out that this lecture today is less than what we talked about in lab. But that means that we've now done this twice. Yes. Have a good weekend, everyone.